Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. More now on the implications of President Obama's evolving stance on gay marriage. Before the break, we looked at the potential political impact in the presidential race in a swing state such as New Hampshire.
There's also the issue of what it means for the strategy or strategies used so far by gay marriage advocates. The question is of particular significance here in Massachusetts, the first state, of course, to legalize gay marriage back in 2004. So joining us now is Jarrett Berrios. He's currently CEO of the American Red Cross of Eastern Massachusetts. He was formerly president of the National Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, and prior to that was a state representative and state senator. Jarrett Berrios, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Richard Tessay. He's currently a Republican candidate for Congress in Massachusetts' 6th District and was candidate for lieutenant governor in 2010. Prior to that, he served both in the Massachusetts House and Senate, concluding his tenure as Senate Minority Leader. Richard Tessay, welcome to you.
Great to be here.
So let me just both get a quick line reaction from both of you in terms of what you think, if any, implications here in Massachusetts are, and if you don't think there are any for what the president says, what you see going forward nationally for gay marriage across the United States. Jarrett Berrios, I'll start with you.
You know, I just have to say, and I think, Richard, we would agree on this, wow, how far we have come since 2004. Richard and I worked together, he on the Republican side, me on the Democratic side, in the Senate to protect marriage, to protect it from there being a ballot referendum. And at that time, there was, in Massachusetts, perhaps the most liberal on this issue in the country, it was tremendously risky on our side. And now, for the sitting president of the United States to come out and make a statement in support of marriage equality, whether or not there's an election going on, I mean, it just sort of shows how much the issue has become mainstream.
Richard, to say?
Well, I would just say that the president came out and said his position had evolved over time, and I do think that that's what's happening pretty much all across the country, as particularly here, you know, we're a lot farther ahead in Massachusetts than the rest of the nation, but I think everyday conversations take place. There are personal interactions between people. And people are changing their attitudes about this. And I think that things are headed in the right direction as far as making sure that everybody is treated equally under the law and treated fairly here in the United States.
You know, that was actually, that was the idea behind the legal strategy back in the early 2000s. The idea was to get marriage in a couple of states and kind of see that the world didn't end. I mean, at the time, our governor, Mitt Romney, was saying literally, the apocalypse was going to be visited upon Massachusetts. There were religious fundamentalists coming, and on the day marriage became legal, May 17th, they were doing prayer circles outside the State House expecting the end of the world. Now, when that didn't happen, it was actually a sunny day on May 17th. There was, and that's perhaps more of a metaphor for the larger experience of people seeing, you know, gay couples are getting married, and it doesn't affect my marriage. The principal argument against gay marriage was it somehow threatened other people. And that didn't happen.
Well, we'll get to more about what the original strategy was in just a second, but I do want to throw open the phones to our listeners, because I'd love to hear from you listeners about what you think next steps are or should be for same-sex marriage advocates now that, of course, President Obama has said at least he personally affirms gay marriage. I mean, do you still think that it is a good idea to pursue gay marriage through the courts? Or maybe, as Jarrett Berrios was saying, since attitudes are changing, and Richard Tessay said this as well, maybe just leaving it up to the people is the way to go. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I think it's actually instructive to go back and just remind us of what the story of how gay marriage was legalized in Massachusetts tells us about this evolution that you were talking about. Because the SJC, the Supreme Judicial Court, basically in 2003 said there's nothing in the Massachusetts state constitution that says that gay marriage should not be legal, so you, Beacon Hill, figure it out. And that's what happened in 2004.
That was actually more what happened in Vermont with the civil unions. In 2000, they actually found a fundamental right for marriage in Massachusetts. So it was marriage will become legal. You, state legislature, need to effectuate the changes, make all the regulatory changes. But in 6 months' time, the decision was November 17th, 2003. In 6 months' time, May 17th, lesbian and gay couples can begin to marry. It wasn't a you must act. It was a the acting was to stop it. And so that's when the ballot referendum efforts from the anti-equality advocates began, and the pressure was on the legislature to put that question on the ballot.
And what were you saying at the time that justified not actually having a referendum? I mean, we are supposed to be a democratic or a small d, you know, society.
Well, there's a process set up to amend the Constitution here in the Commonwealth. And what you have to do is you needed 25% of the legislature, so you needed 50 votes, I think, out of 200. And then you needed two consecutive legislatures to get that vote, and then it would go to the voters. And
It was 75%, not 25. It was a big difference.
Oh, I'm sorry, 25, yeah, on the other side.
Right, other side.
The point being that the founding fathers set up a system of checks and balances because they understood that when you're dealing with people's rights, and you know, as far as constitutional rights go, you have to have some safeguards in place. And the legislature, the process worked. The legislature did what it was supposed to do. There were enough votes to move the question forward during the first legislative session. The next legislative session, there weren't. And I think over time, over that 3 or 4 year period, a lot of people had a chance to reflect. A lot of people went to gay weddings. A lot of people knew people who were gay, who were married, and they understood that they felt more comfortable with it, and they understood that it was really a matter of equality.
Which was the wisdom of our Constitution in Massachusetts, that it didn't allow for immediate reaction and putting this very divisive issue on the ballot. It wanted us as a people to live with this decision and be considered. It had to go two legislative sessions, which meant 4 years before it could actually appear on a ballot. And in those 4 years, kind of like the president, we saw an evolution in public opinion.
But, you know, there are still people in Massachusetts who say the voters of Massachusetts did not get their say, whereas in other states where they have had referendums, I mean, North Carolina was the most recent one, we have seen, at least at that level, overwhelming support for defining marriage, quote-unquote, as a union between a man and a woman.
Sure, but you know what? Our Constitution doesn't guarantee that voters get to have a say in everything. What they do say is you have a state representative and a state senator who you can elect in a representative form of government. And if, as part of that process, they vote to put something on the ballot, you will have a choice. In Massachusetts, we have a tradition of not putting basic human rights on the ballot. And we were proud to make sure that tradition lived through this process. We didn't put basic rights on the ballot.
Richard, say your thoughts.
I would agree with that. I think that the process was set up for legislators to use their best judgment because these are issues of, constitutional rights. And at that point, that's what it was. The question was before us, and I think people in the end ended up making the right decision. Here in Massachusetts, you know, you're going to have different situations in other part of the country for sure. But and here, I think most people, looking back at it, are fairly pleased with the way things ended up working.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the thing you both had mentioned earlier, and that is the trend lines or the way things are evolving across the country. And in order to do that, let's go back to a little bit of what President Obama said yesterday in terms of where he found particular inspiration for, as he said, his evolution on gay marriage.
You know, Malia and Sasha, they've got friends whose parents are same-sex couples. It wouldn't dawn on them that somehow their friends' parents would be treated differently. And frankly, that's the kind of thing that prompts a change of perspective.
Malia and Sasha, of course, being the first daughters of President Obama. And now, I mean, the reason why I wanted to play that tape is because they're young, right? And the polling seems to reflect that when you poll younger and younger people, that the support for gay marriage across the nation rises. We also have generic national polling, one from Gallup just recently, a little earlier this month, that found support for gay marriage at 50 or 51%. But it's, you know, markedly the just the second time that Gallup has found that there's a slight plurality there. So I wonder, this gets us back to this question of, like, moving forward, maybe it's time to not pursue gay marriage through the legal system, but rather just let the demography of the United States, as it evolves, evolve our stance on gay marriage.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Would you have said that in the 1960s about African Americans? Wait till everybody else agrees with you so that you can have the right to eat in that restaurant next to them. Heck no. That's what civil rights law is for, and that's what our Constitution is for, to guarantee your basic rights. And courts and using the courts is a time-honored tradition of protecting against the tyranny of the majority. That's what I think.
Well, I look at this as more of in a historical perspective. This was the same situation that popped up with interracial marriage in 1948 in California. Very controversial court decision there. It ended up in California, became the first state to legalize interracial marriage. It took a while for the rest of the country to catch up state by state. You saw a change until finally the Supreme Court, some 20-something years later, ended up with a decision basically saying that banning interracial marriage in the United States was unconstitutional. I kind of look at this situation that we're on as pretty much on the same track, and you see it state by state right now. There's a tremendous progress being made. I think you need both the legislature in certain states, like New Hampshire, for instance, recently, and you're going to need the courts. But at the end of the day, you want to make sure that everybody is treated equally under the law.
Well, Jarrett Berrios, let me follow up with you, because I think there's something that both of you are saying that makes me wonder. I completely hear your passion on this. But on the other hand, I have heard advocates within the gay community say, at the same time, by pursuing a legal strategy, there is the risk of a case ending up in the Supreme Court, and then, in their feeling, backfiring and getting a ruling that does not affirm gay marriage.
It is a both and to presume that there even could be a single strategy is sort of, that's the fly in the ointment, right? There are people who are not lawyers, who are not going to sit around waiting for lawyers to make up important case arguments to the Supreme Court. They're going to work in their community and move their legislators and push for equality through the legislative route. There are lawyers and there are advocates who are going to push for court cases. They're going to work together because it's all roads to equality. And the public opinion is both, I think, as public opinion tilts more and more in favor of gay and lesbian equality in the marriage context, it becomes easier to win those political fights. But it's really important to recognize that we wouldn't even be having those fights if it weren't for those court cases in some amenable jurisdictions in the first place. And so they really are complementary strategies.
Richard Desai, do you agree with that? Because I heard you just use a historical example that happened on a longer time scale than we're talking about now.
And I do think that, we probably are going to, this isn't going to happen overnight, but look at the progress that's been made already since Massachusetts became the first state in the country to legalize gay marriage. You mentioned earlier the demographics that are changing. Younger people, it isn't a big issue. It's something that, I think the older generation probably spends more time worrying about. Younger people, it doesn't seem to matter at all. They're used to it. Actually, so it isn't the big controversial issue with younger folks. And as they, as the demographics change, I think people will be looking 10 years back at this time and saying, what was the big deal? What was it all about?
The flip side of that's also very important, too, which is that, younger people are more accepting. The flip of that is that older people are less accepting. And the political implications in terms of discussing what does it mean for President Obama to make this decision, there's actually a very real political kind of chicken that's going to come home to roost, or rooster that's going to come home to roost, which is that older folks vote in much larger percentages than younger folks. So in this election, when you say 51% support marriage, that's fine. But what about likely voters in this election? I dare say that among likely voters, it's well south of 50%, which means, and the president's not ignorant of that, which means that I think it took some guts on his part to actually take this position. It would have been easy to put off, and it showed some backbone. And this is an important contrast given the narrative around the presumptive Republican nominee who has flip-flopped on so many social issues. So I think this could become, that is to say, the issue might become not marriage, but kind of fidelity to core principles. And the president's fidelity to this issue, which just made sense.
Well, when you start sort of parsing the polling data down even further, you find that, say, amongst African Americans, a recent poll said that 55% do not support gay marriage. In other swing states, Florida, there was a fall survey that shows gay marriage support at 38%, but 48% disapproval. So, and in the political context, as Anthony was talking about earlier, even in New Hampshire, these things still matter. Richard Desai?
I look at the whole situation that I'm glad the president came out on the right side of the issue as far as I'm concerned. But I hate to see it in the middle of an election campaign. I wish he had done it 2 years ago or 3 years ago when he first took office. because I think people would have looked at it in a different context. As, rather than being in the heat of the moment in a presidential campaign, a lot of people are saying, well, did he do this for, you know, this reason or that reason? Is it going to help him or hurt him? You know, I think that the debate, you know, if it wasn't in the middle of an election cycle, would have been, is this the right or wrong thing to do? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think people would have looked, you know, maybe there would have been a little more thoughtful debate taking place if it wasn't in the middle of an election cycle.
Well, listeners, that question of whether it was the right or wrong thing to do and the timing, would love to hear your answer to that. Please do send us your thoughts at radioboston.org. But Richard Tessay, Republican candidate for Congress in Massachusetts' 6th District and former Senate Minority Leader here at in Beacon Hill, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure.
And Jarrett Berrio, CEO of the American Red Cross of Eastern Massachusetts and former president of the National Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. Great to have you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
When President Obama spoke of his evolution on gay marriage, many historians immediately heard echoes of another president's evolution.
It ought to be possible, in short, for every American to enjoy the privileges of being American without regard to his race or his color.
That was President John F. Kennedy speaking from the Oval Office on June 11th, 1963, a day civil rights historians call a turning point in the Kennedy presidency.
Kennedy was always relatively sympathetic to civil rights, but it was never a priority issue for him.
Bruce Miroff is a professor of political science at the State University of New York in Albany and author of Pragmatic Illusions, The Presidential Politics of John F. Kennedy. Miroff says Kennedy's own evolution began with a familiar complaint that as a presidential prospect in 1960, JFK was detached, dispassionate toward social problems. Civil rights activists considered Kennedy the candidate of reason, not passion, in politics.
Actually, during the campaign, in competition with Nixon, who had a relatively good civil rights record for the time, Kennedy took a more forward stance, even saying that he would be supportive of the then sit-in movement. However, once he was elected with considerable support from black voters, he was very cautious not to offend the then solidly Democratic white South.
So does it seem as if pragmatic politics outweighed any moral conviction Kennedy had in those early years as president?
Certainly it was pragmatic. Again, I think civil rights had never been that high on his list of priorities. It was rather remote from his personal experience. And so he approached the issue primarily politically, at least until 1963.
On June 11th of that year, in defiance of Governor George Wallace's personal blockade, Kennedy sent National Guard troops to forcibly desegregate the University of Alabama. Later that day, the president addressed the nation.
For all of his presidency up to then, civil rights supporters had pleaded with him to take a moral stance, to insist this was not simply a constitutional or legal issue about rights, but a fundamental moral issue in the American tradition and in American democratic values. And in that June 11 speech, Kennedy finally spoke in precisely those terms.
We are confronted primarily with a moral issue. It is as old as the scriptures and is as clear as the American Constitution. The heart of the question is whether all Americans are to be afforded equal rights and equal opportunities, whether we are going to treat our fellow Americans as we want to be treated.
And so what parallels does Bruce Miroff see between Kennedy's evolution and that of President Obama?
The politics always pointed towards caution. It was also a move that threatened precisely the political risks that had always led to a cautious presidential stance. In both cases, in the white South, and ironically, in Obama's case, perhaps in among many African-American voters who are not friendly to same-sex marriage. But nonetheless, in the end, these presidents historically, and you could even go back to Lincoln, have come down on the historic side of equality and the creed of the Declaration of Independence.
But Miroff says the parallels may end there. In the 1963 speech, Kennedy called on Congress to pass the Civil Rights Act. He insisted the law of the land be changed at every level. Whereas drafting federal legislation on gay marriage is a step President Obama has made clear he is not willing to take.
Still to come, our weekend picks and Woody Says, the life and music of Woody Guthrie on stage. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.